Kerry Peck is in our studio, the attorney that we talk about so much here on the radio station. Hey, Kerry, welcome to the show.
Hello, John. How are you? It's a gorgeous day outside.
It really is. It was a nice night, too, a couple of weeks ago when you won the, you were honored with the Rita Hayworth Charitable Award from the Alzheimer's Association. You do so much work for that organization. It was nice to be part of that event.
Well, John, we had a wonderful evening, and I was so honored that you could come and join us. And I was privileged that you introduced me. And the Alzheimer's Association is just a great group. They raise money for research. They provide educational programming. They provide support groups. And, you know, if you're a family in need of help in the world of Alzheimer's, you should contact the Alzheimer's Association.
Rosalind Carter's in the news today, just diagnosed with dementia. And Supreme Court Justice was at our table.
That's right. Illinois Supreme Court Justice Joy Cunningham joined us, and we were very honored to have her with us. She has a health care background. She was a nurse.
Oh, that's right.
She volunteered at Planned Parenthood as a nurse and then worked as a nurse to put herself through law school. And, you know, ultimately over a period of many, many years was on the appellate court for 15 years. And in December of last year was appointed to the Illinois Supreme Court, where she'll ultimately be seeking a tenure term.
You are in charge of the Illinois Supreme Court's Commission on Elder Law. I want to talk about that in a minute. Also, did you watch Succession?
I did not. I read about it. But, you know, it was kind of like watching work on TV because I do it every day. And I watch and I deal with these fighting families, you know. So it I took a pass intentionally.
Okay, but in the final episode, there's a scene where their father has passed away and now they're all putting stickers on things.
Right.
What, in your experience, is the worst or best way to handle the distribution of those unclaimed assets?
Well, I think that there's two ways. The best way is to have mom or dad, when they're doing their estate plan, to prepare what we lawyers call a memorandum of personal property. And it's attached to the will, or it's attached to the revocable living trust. And then it specifically says, you know, John gets the sofa and Sam gets the car and things like that. But most people maybe never get to do that, even though their lawyers encourage them to. Another way that I found very successful is with multiple children, you line them up and they each pick a number. You know, let's assume there's four children. They pick a number out of a hat, one through four, and the first one get with number one goes first, and number two, and number three, and number four. And then you reverse the order.
Ah.
So number four then goes first, number three goes second, and on down the line. That's a very fair, random way to try and avoid fights. Unfortunately, personal property results in just massive brawls amongst family members. Usually, it's over a favorite sentimental item, or very frequently, it's over mom's jewelry or wedding ring, her engagement ring, things like that.
What if they take mom's wedding ring? I got the ring. You wanted it, but I got it. And then they sell it for cash. You can do that too, right? There's nothing legally preventing me from doing that, right?
Well, there's nothing legally preventing you from doing it once you, you know, legally acquire ownership, not just possession. So,
What's the deal on that? Because is the sticker method legally binding? Like, say, we both have a sticker on the ring or the sofa, we both want it. What does the law say? Who should get it?
The sticker method is totally a voluntary potential agreement by the children, and usually it doesn't work because there's always a race to the house to be the first one to put the stickers on, and at the end of the day, it just doesn't work.
But, I mean, there's nobody has legal standing in that case, right?
No, nobody has one up.
A judge would not decide for you. That's up to you guys.
Unless the family had agreed that the first sticker on there, you know, is the winner takes all, so to speak.
Well, but how is that agreement made?
It's going to have to be in writing.
It's got to be in writing. Yeah. But I would imagine that the parents, say they've passed away now, may have said, okay, we know everybody covets the ring or the car or the sofa, whatever the cherished items are. But you got a house full of stuff. So I'm not going to say who gets the blender, right?
No.
So what advice do you have for us about all of that stuff?
Well, I think that the fallback here is get mom or dad to do it. And if mom or dad picks the most important things and you know, the leftovers are surviving the blender, for example. It's hard to believe people would be, but they might fight over the blender. I think that the family's got to come to reality and look at each other in the eye and say, you know what, this isn't worth fighting over. Let's reach an agreement how we distribute it.
Isn't there something legal about the wife? If the husband dies, the wife gets everything, right?
Absolutely. Okay. If assuming the husband dies without a will, the wife gets 50% and the kids get 50%. Husband dies with a will and leaves everything to the wife gets it all.
Oh, but 50-50, the wife and the kids? Without a will. So four kids, they would each get 1/4 of 50%.
Correct.
Of what? Is it the total valuation of the estate?
It's generally yes. I would say that would be an appropriate place to start the discussion.
Yeah.
So right. You put all the assets together in a pot, and you split them up.
But doesn't the law also favor the first child in some instances?
Unequivocally, no.
The oldest son gets the stuff.
Maybe in England, you know. Not here in Illinois.
Really, that you have no standing as the oldest child.
No.
But a lot of families do it that way. They say, all right, the four kids, the oldest goes first. What do you think of that?
I think it's a big mistake, and I think that birth order should not be used. We have clients that come in and say, I'm going to name my firstborn child, daughter or son, to be the executor to manage my estate when I'm gone because they're the firstborn. And I say, well, okay, but isn't the second-born child a banker or in finance more capable? Well, that's true, but I think I need to name the first child.
Okay, so suppose mom and dad have appointed one of the kids the executor of the estate for financial purposes, and they die. Does that child then have some authority over the process?
Absolutely. If that child is named executor and appointed executor by the court, okay, significant difference, named and appointed, that child will have significant authority over the decision-making process in allocating the personal property.
Really? So if there's a disagreement, the executor, that child could say, you get the blender, you don't get the blender.
That's correct. That could happen.
What's the difference between mom and dad saying you're the executor and the court recognizing that?
Well, in most instances, a will has very limited value until it's admitted to probate and the a child or executor is nominated. So that when someone is nominated and appointed by the court, they can go to the court and say, I want what's called letters of office, which is a piece of paper stamped by the clerk of the circuit court and says, John Williams is executor, he's in charge.
The court will generally recognize the intent of the parents when
Absolutely.
They did appoint. So that's a formality, but you got to go through that.
Right. It is a formality. But, you know, there are circumstances in which we intentionally attempt to avoid that probate process. We've talked about it on your show many times, the use of revocable living trust, because in Illinois, if you die with assets in your name alone in excess of $100,000, the law requires a post-death court probate proceeding.
I just got a text message about that. I'm going to ask you about that.
Okay.
Also, this Illinois Supreme Court Commission. You got a question for this guy? He is Illinois' premier, can you tell? Elder law attorney. His name is Kerry Peck. Before we just go to some questions, Kerry, you were going to chair this Supreme Court Commission on Elder Law. You guys are doing a listening tour. You're going to be in Kane County tomorrow. Is that right?
That's right, John. The Illinois Supreme Court last spring created, for the first time ever in Illinois history, the Illinois Supreme Court Commission on Elder Law. And I was selected to chair that commission. I was honored by the Supreme Court to be put in that position. And what we're doing is we're trying to find out from your listeners, from the audience of WGN and from the community at large, everyone, what experiences they've had in conjunction with older adults, their interaction with the court system, how to avoid financial exploitation, what their stories are about either they or their loved ones being exploited. And so I'm pleased to say we're going to be out in Kane County, in the Kane County Branch Court in St. Charles tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Your listeners are all invited to attend. We're going to have opening remarks by the Chief Judge of Kane County. We're going to have remarks by Supreme Court Justice Elizabeth Rochford, who represents the 2nd District, Kane County, and at those counties out that direction. We're going to hear from State's Attorney Jamie Mosser, who will be discussing the investigation and prosecution of financial exploitation of older adults, along with a detective from the Elgin Police Department and other notable judges and speakers. But this is a listening tour. We want to hear from folks in the community. And again, if you can make it out at 530 South Randall Road tomorrow in St. Charles at 2 o'clock, you're welcome to join us and tell us your story. We want to hear from you.
Kane County Branch Court, 2 to 4 tomorrow, the listening tour. What are your stories? John, can you ask Mr. Peck what happens if in the course of creating a trust or will, no one wants to be the executor? The estate isn't too large, but it's over $100,000. How can we avoid probate? You hardly ever hear about that. What do we do?
Well, if the assets are in the decedent's name alone, in excess of $100,000, you can't avoid the probate. On the other hand, if some of those assets are in joint tenancy, joint tenancy is John and I own a bank account. I die, John gets the account. That avoids probate. Life insurance avoids probate. I have life insurance on my life. John's the beneficiary. He gets it. That avoids probate. But if the assets are in excess of 100, you can't avoid it. You go to the court and you tell them that you don't have a someone that wishes to act as executor, and the court will likely appoint the Cook County or whatever county you're in public administrator to administer that estate.
My dad had a will which left a sum of money to an organization. He had issues with some of the leadership changes in the organization and said, now he didn't want to leave them anything. He called his lawyer, but it wasn't put in writing. So now what happens?
The organization gets the money. You know, the only way that we as a society can, you know, rely upon what an individual wants to do and with their property, with their money, when they're dead, is put it in writing.
Hey, Kerry, specifically, what items should be put in a trust?
Everything except your IRAs, your 401ks, and your car. So in large measure, almost everything can go in there. But don't forget, you need to retitle those assets. So if you have a bank account, it needs to say the John Williams Revocable Living Trust. You must change the title to put it into the trust.
I'll say the name is Bob. It's not, but I know of somebody who was promised by grandma to give them her vintage old car. And she said, Bob, I'm going to give you the car. And she acquired dementia over the years. And a different Bob in the family got the car. And there was this confusion about it, but it was pretty clear to Bob 1 who the Bob was. Bob 2 got the car. What do you say about that situation?
I say it's a tremendous tragedy amongst the family. It did not carry out the intention of a mom or the older adult.
Yeah.
But the reality is, ladies and gentlemen, put it in writing. And that doesn't mean do it at home by yourself. I've never seen a do-it-yourself at home will or trust work. They're always litigated. They're always in the courtroom. Go to a lawyer, please.
I'm in the process of starting an estate plan next week with a lawyer. What single piece of advice should I go in with?
I think that you need to have a broad structure of what you want, and you need to agree on fees, legal fees, in writing, and you need to know what the scope of the work is that that fee agreement covers. Is it going to cover all of your estate planning? Is it going to cover the probate? Is it going to cover the taxes?
That's an awkward conversation to have walking in the door, though, right?
Critical conversation.
So, and again, and you shouldn't be offended, nor should they, by you asking it, like, what are you going to charge me? What if I change it? What blah, 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 blah. I need to know right now what this is costing me, including me sitting here right now.
Right. In my office, we offer initial consultations, no cost. We put our fee agreements in writing, so there's complete transparency. I would encourage you to do business with a lawyer that's going to give everything to you relative to the fees in writing.
Chris, you had a question for Carrie Peck. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good. What's up?
So my grandparents raised me, but they never legally adopted me. And they both recently passed away, and I'm now being told that I'm not entitled to anything from their estate because I was never legally adopted. Is this true, or am I getting the runaround?
No, unfortunately, your grandparents' descendants, which probably are the grandchildren or their own children if they're alive, are likely to inherit under what we call the laws of descent and distribution or intestate succession without a will. So, unfortunately, Chris, I'm very sorry to tell you, without getting adopted, you're likely not to inherit.
But they could have included him in the will, even if he wasn't adopted.
100% correct.
Were you included in the will, Chris?
Not that I know of, no. And there's a family member of mine that is the executor, I guess you call it,
yeah,
of their estate, and they're refusing to give me anything.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Okay, none of that matters. If the siblings would agree, they raised you as their own, you should be included. That petition isn't working, huh?
Yeah, so basically I don't have a leg to stand on.
Well, I think that the if there's a will
that should be they raised him as their own.
We
he
agree,
should be
John.
Included.
We agree, John. If there is a will, it's supposed to be filed in the county in which they died within 30 days. So you might be able to get a copy of the will and see if you're in it. If you're in it, you're good as gold. If you're not in it, unfortunately, it's not a good
story.
When
I get to be King, Chris, you're in it. Good luck to you on that. And if you need advice,
awesome.
I'll give Carrie's phone number. I'm sorry about that story. Probably not the first time you've heard something like that.
We've unfortunately heard it a lot.
Okay, Carrie, we're out of time. Carrie Peck will be leading that listening tour at Kane County Courthouse, the branch court on Randall Road in St. Charles from 2 to 4 tomorrow. If you've got issues you want the court to hear about, here's your chance to, isn't it nice, have them listen. Nice to see you in our studio today. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, John.
That's Carrie Peck, Peck Ritchie Law.